it is going to be Daryl from Conscious Contact in Doylestown.
My name is Daryl. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Daryl.
Wow. Big ups to Andre. He got a big, you know, round of applause from everybody. You know, he must be the man in these parts, you know. I would like to thank the group for inviting me out. Thank the group for having me. This group is very special to me, I must say. When I first started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, this was my introduction to AA right here. This group, the 1 hour speaker group here in Quakertown. But this group started in Percocet, I believe. There was a guy that drove to Pottstown. I'm from Pottstown, by the way. There was a guy that drove to Pottstown. He would pick everybody up. It would be about four of us. And this is back in 2006. And he would bring us back to this group. And we would hear a message of hope and recovery. And I would like to say that I stayed sober, but I didn't. I have a lot of sobriety dates. My last sobriety date is November 13th of 2016. And when I came to this group, I seen a lot of service, I seen a lot of hope, and I seen a lot of recovered people, a lot of men and women. And after this meeting, this guy, he would take us all to Churros to get pizza, if anyone knows where that is. You remember that? Yeah. He would take us all to Churros to get pizza, and he would buy everybody pizza. And like I said, that was my introduction to AA right there. It wasn't a clubhouse meeting. I hear a lot of people say that they had bad experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous from the start when they first came in, about the clubhouse meeting, don't drink, come to meetings, and you'll be all right. You'll get a miracle. But that was not my experience at all. My experience in Alcoholics Anonymous was coming to places like this. And then on Friday nights, we would go to York, Pennsylvania, to the White Rose, and also hear a one-hour speaker. And I would like to say that my mind was open to that, but it wasn't. And you know, when I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous then, you know, like it says in How It Works, rarely do we see a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Well, I was one of those guys who didn't follow the path of AA. You know, I've had guys in front of me that showed me the way. And my main thought was this, you know, in Pottstown at the clubhouse, there's a guy named Kensington Joe. And he is the one that has over 40 years of recovery. And when I would sit down in this clubhouse, you know, Pottstown's filled with recovery houses and halfway houses. And you know, when we would all come in there, all the new people, he would say, look to your left and look to your right. And I didn't understand what he was saying. And he would say, look to your left and look to your right again. And at the end of the meeting, he was one of those double dippers. At the end of the meeting, he would share again and say, yeah, because once the pain goes away, they go away. And you know, that was resentment number one in AA. And that guy was right. You know, once I come in, I get a little fat, you know, I get my little $8 an hour job, and you know, I get my cell phone and people start showing me attention, and then I start buying Jordans, and you know, things start to fall in play. I get a girlfriend, and I no longer need you people. I no longer need to come up here to these meetings. You know, like, I no longer need to hop in that car with that guy and, you know, drive an hour away to sit down with you people and watch everybody hug each other and eat pizza at Churros at the end of the meeting. I'm too cool for that now. I'm cured. I'm cured of alcoholism in my mind. Well, that's my history of this meeting. It's a very beautiful place, and that is my hope right here. You know, Quakertown, feet first. I kind of remember when you guys moved over here, and I kind of didn't like it. I mean, like, when you guys moved outside, and it was like 100 degrees out there, and, you know, like, the bugs started biting me and stuff like that, and, you know, like, but But you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous right there. You know, when people come together and a good speaker comes in and shares his hope, you know, for that person that doesn't have hope. And Eric, I welcome you, man. You know, I talked to you before the meeting and you have my phone number. Please reach out to me. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous right here. You know, like hope and recovery. I grew up in Pottstown. My first time coming to AA was in 2006, as I explained. And how that happened was this. I ended up in a bar. The bar was called, it's a Jefferson Cafe on Jefferson Street in Pottstown, PA. It's a dive bar. If anybody knows what a dive bar is, it was Super Bowl Sunday. And if anybody ever seen The Basketball Diaries, has anybody ever seen that movie?
Sure.
You know, when Leonardo DiCaprio was in that bar watching his friend play basketball on TV, that was me. I was watching my cousin in the Super Bowl. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers were playing the Seattle Seahawks. I was lonely. I was homeless at the time. And I remember my phone was about to get shut off. And at this time, I burned every bridge in the book. Not exactly burned. I blew every bridge up. If you must say that. That's my definition right there. Nobody wanted to be around me. I got kicked out of my dad's house. I got evicted from my apartment. And I was homeless. And I had nowhere else to go. I had $6 in my pocket, and they had dollar drinks. After I drank those 6 Budweisers without a tip. I called my father up. And you know, a father's love is always a father's love. And my father raised me, and he was a good father. He's a good dad still to this day. A very good dad. And for years and years, I was resentful towards this man for the wrong reasons. And I will get to that. I didn't think this man was going to pick the phone up. But when he picked the phone up, he asked me, where was I? And he said, wow, you're right down the street from the house. He said, please walk up. And I said, well, you know, she don't like me. And that's his girlfriend at the time that, you know, that he lives with. I mean, like, they live together. I mean, she's living in my father's house with him. And he's telling me to walk up the street. He says, just walk up. And, you know, like, I'm so feared up. Oh, she don't want me around. And, you know, like, you don't want me around no more. You know what I mean? And, but, Dad, I have nowhere else to go. I mean, like, I have nothing at this time. And like I said, a father's love is a father's love. And, you know, he welcomed me with open arms. And he called a friend of his up in AA. And that's how important AA is, because you never know. You know, he has a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous that he's seen recover from this disease, if anybody calls it a disease. And that's our, you know, like our outlet right there. You know, if someone is struggling, we know where to go. We know who to call to help out another family member. And that was that right there. When my dad reached out to this man, it was instant. He stopped watching the game. He came and picked me up at my dad's house. He knew I was drunk. He didn't bang me over the head with the big book or anything like that. He just wanted to fill me out. And you know, when this man filled me out, when we were talking, he knew me when I was a kid because he coached me in football. And when we were sitting down, he told me to get a Gatorade and a slice of pizza. And when I got that Gatorade and that slice of pizza, I couldn't really eat the pizza at the time. I wasn't really hungry, but he told me to pack it up and take it with me. And he said, your dad's going to let you back in the house, Darryl. He said, we're just going to sit down and talk right now. And when this man sat down and talked to me, he told me he's going to take me to an 8 a.m. meeting tomorrow morning to be ready. He said 8 a.m. And I'm like, well, you know, like I'm going to need some rest. So this is typical Darryl right here. You know, like I'm back, just like that. I'm back in my father's life, you know, and I'm back at his house, and all I had to do was go to that meeting in the morning. I wasn't up. My dad and his girlfriend went to breakfast. They came back at 10 a.m. and he asked me to leave. He said, you're so full of it. I'm so sick of you right now. And you know, like I pleaded and pleaded, And luckily there was a new meeting, and you know, like this guy took me to the new meeting, and that's when I met these group of kids, you know, that came up to this place, and you know, like they were so happy, they were so joyous, they were so free, and they were filled with this, they were armed with this, and you know, people make fun of them, call them big bull thumpers, they call them names and stuff like that at that local clubhouse, you know, and you know, like these guys were really doing the deal, and when they were sharing, raised their hand, it was like back to back, like boom, 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 like circuit, and you know, I'm like, why don't these guys just shut up? And I thought they were like programmed. They sound like robots. And so, you know, the one kid, he was 19 years old, and he told me he had 2 years of sobriety, and I said, no way. How is that possible? And he said, I'll show you the way. And so when he started taking me up here, and we started going to York, PA, and we started to go to other places, and at that time, oh yeah, by the way, we were listening to speaker CDs going up to York too. And for a new guy listening to a speaker CD, wow. Just going all the way up there with four guys in the car, and then the one guy upgraded to a minivan, and no, it wasn't a minivan. It was like this big old school van, you know, and he actually had a bed in the back, you know, and it was crazy, you know, like, and you know, like there was like 20 guys in this van, and I don't smoke, so can you imagine 19 other people smoking in the van? And you know, like I'm sitting there, and I'm like, guys, you know, like I'm like, give me a break here, you know what I mean? And I mean, please give me a break. And they're like, there goes Daryl whining again, you know what I mean? And I'm like, yo, for real, like seriously, you know what I mean? Like, we're have some respect for me, you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys don't know me yet, you know what I mean? And this and that. So I had like this street attitude at the time, and you know, like how quickly that changed. But you know, when this kid was taking me through the steps, things start to happen right away. I mean, like when I mean right away, they start to happen right away. But you know, and anybody could go through this work, but you have to be willing. You know, like you have to really, for me, and you know, like I'm just sharing my experience. I was not willing at the time. I was not ready. If anybody knows what that's like, I wasn't ready. I was just fine with coming around and hanging out with these guys, and you know, like, why they buy me this and they buy me that, and you know, and you know, like we go to the speaker's house and stay till midnight and 1 a.m. and then we drive back to Pottstown, and you know, like I was going for the ride, but you know what though, the seed was planted, and I always knew where to go for good AA. I always knew where to go. Every time I relapsed or I got high or things weren't going my way, I always knew who to call, because that's very important. That seed was planted. And you know, my sponsor today talks about that all the time. You might not like who you're around, but you have to plant that seed for the alcohol. So if something happens, they know where to come in a kind and loving way. These people didn't argue with me. They didn't fight with me. They put up with me. And you know, now I realize, and I'm like, I realize that, and I understand that, you know, like the patience of all this stuff. These guys were armed with something that I wasn't armed with, and that's early on in recovery. And you know, when I went through this process with this kid, he was 19 years old, and I'm 24 at the time, and I wanted what he had so badly. His mom told him that she loved him. His dad wanted him around. He was a good big brother to his sisters. He was a good big brother to his brothers. And he told me, Daryl, my life wasn't always like that. I burned my life to the ground when I was 16 years old early on. It was lucky that I met this man right here when I got out of rehab. And he took me through the work. He took me through the 12 steps of AA. And when I went through this process with this kid, it's kind of weird, because when we came to the ninth step, I just started working at the time, and I was making $8.50 at Kiwi. If anybody knows what Kiwi is, they make shoe polish. And I got that job through a temp agency. When I went through the work with this guy, and I was on the ninth step, amends, I remember I owed someone $600. And this was painful. I'm just not getting on my feet. You know, like the first thing going through my mind is an apartment. And he told me, he said, you have to pay this money back. And how I got that $600 was, I was kind of pickpocketing the penny cash, you know, where I used to work at. And I would take money here and take money there. And we kind of rounded up to $600. Darryl, you took $600. You owe these people $600. And I'm like, Mitch, I don't know, man. You know, I had $850 in my checking account. And that's all I have to my name. And he said, well, it's not your money. And I'm thinking, like, dude, are you, I mean, like, $600, man, that's not going to leave me with a lot of money left over. Like, at this time, I'm living with my father. He wants me to pay him $400 a month. That's how I found my own place, and I'm doing good. In my mind, doing good is not drinking. You know, when I'm living with this man, things are going through my mind. Well, we're arguing. He wants me to cut the grass. I don't want to cut the grass. You know, he's like, all right, I'll cut the grass, Darryl. You know, and you know, parents, for me, and this is my experience, and I see it with guys that I sponsor. You know, when we get back into our parents' lives, they are just so satisfied and happy that we are not drinking and drugging, at least for me. And like I said, this is my story. He was just so happy and satisfied that I wasn't drinking and drugging and that I was healthy and I was going to work. He thought that I was a productive member of society. But at this time, I'm still causing problems in this house between him and his girlfriend because I won't cut the grass and I'm living there and I won't do the dishes. Well, that's not my dish. I'm not going to do it. I didn't make this mess. I'm not going to clean it up. But you ate dinner here, Darryl. Well, I pay you rent. You know, sober. These are things that are going through my mind sober. 100% sobriety without a drink. And I have over 8 months at this time. 8 months of sobriety at this time. And so he tells me something that I hear today. Darryl, how free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? You know, you are cutting your life short. You know, like it is a 100% understatement on how you're living your life right now. I promise you, if you make these amends, you will no longer have problems with your father no more. I'm like, okay, what do I do? He says, go to God with it. So the first thing I go to him, well, what if they call the cops? He said, then they call the cops. It's a consequence you'll have to pay. Then again, Darryl, it's not your money. I'm like, Mitch, you're really killing me right now. So then again, how free do you want to be, Darryl? Do you want to be free? Do you want to keep arguing with your family? And he warned me. He told me, he said, your dad's about to throw you out. He said, I just know it. I just know it. And I'm like, look at the way you're living. I said, well, I'm sober. He said, that's not good enough. And you know, I work with a guy today and he tells me that we're built different. And I understand that now. What this kid was saying is 100% right. I mean, we are 100% built different than anybody on this earth. Alcoholics, our bodies are just, you know, like our mindsets are thinking the victim mentality. You owe me this, you owe me that. You know, I remember when you did this to me when I was little, Dad. You know, like, you're the reason for Mom leaving. And, you know, like, you owe me this. And I will throw that in his face. And, you know, this man will just suck it up, man. And, like I said, he was just so happy that I was sober and I had weight on me and I'm eating and I'm going to work and I'm giving him $400 a month. And, you know, but I could tell he wanted more out of me. You know, he could tell that I wasn't happy and I wasn't. I was not happy. So then again, we go back to this amends right here. And he's telling me how to make an amends to my father too as well. He's telling me to cut the grass without him even asking to. He's telling me to do the dishes, to put the dishes away without him even asking. And I'm asking him, you know, like, does this really work? And he says, try. And you know, it does work. It does work. But then again, you have to be willing. It was so painful for me to do that. And when I say it was painful for me to do that, it was painful for me to actually do something for my family, to actually get out of myself and to do something for my father, who came there, who said he didn't want nothing to do with me, and he came there at the drop of a dime and picked me up at that bar He took me to this guy who introduced me to this way of life. And it was painful for me to do that stuff. And so I do what any other alcohol does. Well, at least what Daryl does. I get up and I move. And it's funny, right? Because I sit back and laugh at this. You know, I got a girlfriend in her rooms. And she was in a local recovery house at the time. And, you know, like we moved to Bristol. And I still remember that. I'm like, yes, you know, I got my tax returns. I can put down an apartment. You know, she's serving at Olive Garden, and you know, like I'm free of all this. I lost contact of all those guys in Pottstown, of all these people up here, and you know, like I'm living life. You know, like I'm living, and you know, my father didn't do nothing to me, and my mother didn't do nothing to me at all. And you know, for some reason, I'm not talking to them. You know, like I'm not picking the phone up for them. It's like I don't owe you nothing. You know, this is what you wanted from me, and I thought that they didn't like my girlfriend at the time, and that wasn't the truth. It was that a family member, a parent's love is a parent's love. They just want the best for you. They just want the best for me. That's all. And you know, like they would tell me these things. And I wouldn't listen. I would think that I know what I would think I know what my own good is. You know, like today, a man tells me, "You're a man with a plan," and that's what it was. I was a man with a plan, and before you know it, I'm drinking, I'm getting high, I'm doing what I do. Luckily, I have good work ethic. I still have my job. And you know, like when this stuff's progressing in my life, you know, like the pain that I'm feeling, it starts to get greater and greater. Because I'm starting to get lonely. And what I mean by lonely is, you know, I pushed everybody in my family away. And must I say, I have a really close family. My family is really close. I love my mom. Me and my mom were really, really close. And it wasn't always like that. I didn't get to the part where she left my father when I was 11 and I thought she abandoned me. And I held a huge resentment towards her for that. And you know, like today, because of God, and God bless God, because of God and these people in these rooms and my sponsor, I have a relationship with my mother today. You know, like my mother is like my best friend. But you know, at that time, I wasn't talking to my mom. And then I stopped talking to my father for no reason. And me and this girl was living happily ever after. And you know, like things would just start happening. You know, like when I say things would just start happening, it's like things will happen, but you're blind to it. And what I mean by that is, how do I put this? Things will become missing in my house. You know, she had an addiction, and I had an addiction, and things were being pawned, and things were being sold. And then again, you know, I get that addiction notice. And it's funny how this one happened, because two sheriffs came to my door at my apartment in Bristol and put an eviction notice on my door, and they told me when I had to leave. But I had to go to court first. I had to show up for court, so. And what do? I moved back in with my father. My father brings me back with open arms. He takes me in. He don't know the progression of my disease. He don't know how bad I'm drinking. And he takes me in and he says, but this time it's a different story. He says, you have 90 days. I don't want $400 a month this time. You get a job, you save your money, and you get out of my house. You have 90 days. And you know, like, I knew where to go. When that seed was planted, I knew just where to go. I knew just who to come around. I got back with those same group of guys. The guy that was sponsoring at the time, he had relapsed. And I got with another guy. And I was full force into it. When I said I was full force into it, I was full force into it. But the only thing I did not do, we went through the steps. And like it says in step 12, I didn't do step 12. I was so selfish. I wanted to do things my way again. I was so selfish. I was so selfish to the core. that I just wanted my life to get better. I just wanted my father to like me again. I just wanted my mother to be in my life. And then at that time, you know, things really got rough. Things really got rough in my family. Because when I say things really got rough. You know, and it wasn't me this time. It was not me. And I would like to say I have three siblings. I have three brothers. My mother has four children. My dad has two children. I'm my mother's third child. I'm my father's oldest child. And when I say things got rough, things got real rough. My little brother, a Division I athlete, big guy, 6'7", 354-pound scholarship Division I athlete. He got kicked out of school. And when he got kicked out of school, he came home. He came back to town and he got in trouble. And when I mean he got in bad trouble. And you know, he got in trouble so bad that it caused my father to have a stroke. My dad was stressed out so bad. He got charged with attempted murder, armed robbery, and a home invasion. And after court, after he was sentenced to 9 to 22 years on his first offense. And when I say it gave my dad a stroke, it gave my dad a stroke. And then after that, a year later after that, my dad had a heart attack. Just from the stress of what happened to my family. Just from the stress of what that caused him. He had a heart attack. First a stroke, and then a heart attack. And then I had no choice but to go home and help my father. And my dad's friend said, he said it clearly, he said, "You were so selfish." And you know, I went and talked to my brother. I was embarrassed, you know, I was ashamed, I was embarrassed, you know, like this, his name was in the local newspaper. It was on the news. It was so big that it made the news. It was on every news channel, Fox, ABC, NBC, you know, former Pottstown High standout. Got charged with this and that, and they showed my brother coming out of handcuffs in Chester County Courthouse and getting on a bus to go to jail and stuff like that. And you know, like that's how big this news was. This news was really big news, and my dad didn't want to read the papers. And my dad worked for a school district. My dad, he's a retired warehouse worker for the University of Westchester. And when he retired, he picked up a job at Pottstown High School as a janitor. My dad was so embarrassed he didn't even go to work for months. And then that's what caused him to have a stroke. And you know, and then my mom stepped in. And I like to say that was God's grace right there. Because my mom said, "Why don't you talk to your brother?" And I said, "Who are you to tell me that? You left us when we were 11. And she said, "Well, that's it. You know, I have nothing to say to you." And you know, like, I was thinking about that for a long time. And my dad's friend, like I said, the one that bought me the Alcoholics Anonymous, he was telling me how selfish I was because I would not go with my dad to go see my brother. I would go with him. I would drive his truck there, but I won't go into jail though. And my dad was like, "I did not raise you like that. I'm not going to argue and fight with you because of my condition, but I didn't raise you like that, Daryl." And then again, I'm Daryl Jr., and I'm proud to say I am a junior. And when he told me, he said, "I didn't raise you like that." And then my mom will come with us sometimes, and I'm like, "Well, why are you bringing her? You know what happened, blah, 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 this and that." And you know, and my mom was just, I mean, she is such an angel. Oh my gosh, she is a beautiful person. And you know, I would say some sly remarks towards her, you know, and this is me sober, you know, sober. And I mean, so-called in sobriety, so-called, you know, like they think I'm going to AA, they think I'm doing this, you know. And you know, a friend of mine tells me, "Daryl, you could say anything you want from this podium or in any AA meeting, any clubhouse meeting, raise your hand, share the best stuff in the world. You know, people would applaud you and stuff like that, but how are you living when you walk out of these doors? You know, how are you living?" And that's exactly, I am the definition of that. at that time. I am the 100% truly definition of that at that time. And, you know, because I'm a man, I'm a son, I'm a brother, and I'm treating his mom like crap. You know, like that's the bottom line of it. You know, like, I'm not living these principles. I'm not going to AA at the time. I'm like, okay, I'm here to help my dad, help my dad get better. And you know, he started to get on my nerves because when in the household that I was brought up in, you know, this man always and I felt as though I owed him, you know, which I did. I did owe him. And you know, when I used to take him to therapy, I used to have to sit there, you know, for hours. And the therapist will tell me things that he will need. And you know, I mean, like when someone has a stroke physically like that, the kind of stroke he had, his stroke was bad because he's a big man. He is a big man. I mean, he's broad and he's a big, strong man, and he's very prideful, and you know, like he likes to do things on his own. And, but the kind of stroke he had, he couldn't do none of that stuff. And I had to be there for him, man. And she said, you let him do things 75% of the way, and you help him 25% of the way. And when he couldn't do some things, I would get so aggravated at him. You know, so mad, so pissed off, and so stubborn. And that's selfishness right there. And you know, this, he couldn't help it. He couldn't help it at all. You know, he was, the whole left side of his body was paralyzed. He couldn't help it. And I would argue with a man that had a stroke. He had a stroke. He had a freaking stroke. I mean, it makes me sick to my stomach just thinking about it. I would argue with a man. I would say, well, she said if you can't do it 75% of the way, you should do it 25%. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And I'm like, you're not doing nothing to better yourself. You're not doing nothing to better your life. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And, you know, there was nothing he could do. And so my mom stepped in and my mom started helping him out. Then I moved out again. I got into another relationship. And you know, this time, this relationship was just, I mean, it was the same, but I said, you know, I'm going to do something. This is the classic AA move right here, I think. You know, I don't know, but you know, I was on all kind of dating sites then, you know what I mean? Tinder, whatever was out there, you know, and I met this girl off of Tinder and I said, well, she's not an alcoholic. You know, things are going to work out great. And this is my mindset, for real. This is my mindset. And, you know, me and that girl had a relationship for 2 years, 2.5 years. And, you know, things were up and down. And I'm like, good and bad. And, you know, and what's so funny about this is I'm thinking in my head, you know, she was a drug and alcohol therapist. And she was telling me things that I needed to do. And she was right about some things, you know, good Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I started doing a clubhouse in Flowertown, because I was living in Roxborough at the time. We had an apartment in Roxborough in Philadelphia. And, you know, like this wasn't your idea relationship. It was kind of weird. People would look at us and, you know, it wasn't what I'm fine with it, you know. You know, she's comforting. I needed someone at that time. I did. I needed someone at that time. I was sick of being lonely. It's time for me to date. It's time for me to get with this girl on Tinder. And, you know, I mean, like, you guys laugh, but that's the classic AA move right there. You know, Tinder, Bumble, I mean, like, whatever they have now, Match and all this stuff, you know. But, you know, like, I get with this girl and you know, like, it lasts 2 years, and I started drinking in between then because I'm untreated. And you know, it was kind of weird one day when we're sitting down and she kind of asked me, you know, like, well, and I'm like, what did you used to do? It was her and her friend. It was her and her friend. Her friend had two kids, and she asked me, she said, what did you used to do? And I told her, I said, yeah, you know, I used to smoke crack and drink vodka, and the way this girl looked at me, and she was like, "Well, what'll happen if you if you if you drink a glass of wine, and I'm like, I'll be smoking crack with your daughters. And so, and so she looked at me like, Em, are you sure you want to be with this guy? And I'm like, that's the truth. That's alcoholism, and that is the truth right there. You know, like, when we run, we run. And I don't know if I would have been smoking crack with her daughters, but, you know, that's probably what would have happened. But, and she asked me to leave, and I had nowhere else to go at that time, and I'm drunk, and I'm working this job, which is the best job I ever had in my life, and I'm still at this job to this day. Well, I quit that job because she wanted me to, and by God's grace, I got that job back today, you know, like through real guidance of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I quit that job, I went to a recovery house, and it was kind of weird when I went to this recovery house. This guy was my friend, and he seen me coming around for a while, and he told me, he said, well, I'm going to make you the house manager. I said, right away? He said, yeah. You know, like, I seen you coming around. It's time for you to get service and, you know, start helping people. So I go to this recovery house in Hatfield. I go to this recovery house in Hatfield, and I can say my life changed. My life changed overnight. I'm not going to lie about that. Within months of me being in this house, I met so many good people. And the structure that was in this house, that was built in this house, was, you know, it's great. You know, like, it's still great to this day. You know what I mean? But still, you know, certain ideas started coming to me. I have a sponsor in AA again, and, you know, certain ideas. And, you know, this is my story. Like I said, this is just my story. It's no one else's story. And all these ideas that are coming to my head are, you know, I have anxiety. Maybe I should take something, you know. And I go see a therapist, and she wants to give me, I'm not going to say the name of it, but she wants to give me something that's not AA approved. And, you know, they call that second in inches, and I heard this guy speak at Expect a Miracle. And I'm like, this is the funniest man I ever met in my life. He is so free. How is he so happy? How is he so free? And he's talking about eating in his story. You know, he's talking about stealing keys and robbing the church and buying Big Macs and stuff. And you know, I got to get this guy's number. And he sends me the first morning text. And I'm like, I got to call this guy. So I call this guy up, and we go to an anniversary in Center City, Philadelphia. He says, yeah, dress up, you know, like, wear a suit. And I dress up. Well, I put on a sport coat, the nicest stuff I had at the time, and a pair of sneakers and a pair of dress pants. And we go to this meeting, and it is, and my eyes are more open. I mean, because I'm willing to do anything right now. You know, I don't need nothing for my anxiety. I don't want nothing. And I am willing to do anything right now. And when I'm riding with this guy, we're laughing the whole way up, and this and that. I'm like, this girl broke my heart. He's laughing at me. And we get to this meeting, and I'm not going to lie to you. It was an anniversary meeting, and, you know, it's, I mean, for real, like, on the flyer, it says wild caught Atlantic salmon, prime rib, wild rice, you know, like, wild turkey and prime rib. At this anniversary meeting, we get there, the line's out the door. And we go through the kitchen because of his connections or whatever like that. I felt special. I mean, seriously, like if anybody ever seen Goodfellas, he went through the kitchen with his girl like that, you know, like that's how it was. So you know, we get to this meeting, and you know, like, I'm eating. They're like, you want another plate? I'm like, yeah, I want another plate. And, you know, like, I'm eating, and you know, speakers from Las Vegas, and we hear the speaker speak, and, you know, we're driving home, and I'm like, yeah, I work tomorrow. You know, like, I got to get home. I had a good time. And I noticed something about him. He's not laughing like he was, you know. And I'm like, what's going on? Everybody in AA did what you did. Do you think we'll have an Alcoholics Anonymous? I look at him like, he said, how much money you got in your pocket? And I'm sitting here counting money. And he said, yeah, you work 40 hours a week. I'm like, yeah, yeah. He said, you didn't put 1 cent in that basket. He said, that's why you're always feeling the way you're feeling, because all you do is come to AA and take. And you know, that man saved my life that night, because that is absolute God's truth. He didn't know me at the time. Just that little instant, just that little stunt right there, what they call it. You know, they call it AA. And you know, I'm not judging nobody. If you have money, you don't put a dollar in the basket, but that was my thing right there. That was the first thing he called me out on, was you like to take, you like to come and take. And you know, like a person like me, should I get resentful at this guy for this? And I'm thinking in my head, should I get resentful? I mean, like at that moment in his car, I'm like, should I get resentful at him for saying this? Or should I just suck it up? And you know, I went home and told a friend this, and he said, there goes that victim mentality again, Daryl. Don't, and I'm like, you're not. I'm like, that, I mean, what he said, he just called you out. I'm like, you do come to AA, and you do take, it's time for you to start giving back, and watch your life change. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you know, I managed a recovery house, and he's like, that's, and I'm like, yeah, and I'm like, that's giving, but it's not really giving back, you know, and you know, when this guy told me come to the group, my first time going to this group, he told me dress like this. And I said, you gotta be crazy. And he said, nah, seriously, you know, but you know, nobody forces you to do nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hear a lot of speakers say this, and no one's unique. The guidance of your sponsor is the best guidance you could ever get in your life. Because they know, they can see you from the outside and the inside, and they know what you need. It's not what you want, Daryl. It's what you need right now. And you need to be in service. And I'm not going to lie. You know, my first time at this meeting, he had me chair, and I thought I was going to die. I couldn't breathe right. And I'm sitting here looking at all these people, and I'm like, it's my first time here. You know what I mean? Like, when they say, this anyone's first time here at this meeting, and you know, I was about to say, yo, this is my first time here, you know, and there's so many people out in the crowd. I didn't want to say that. And you know, and he started laughing at me afterwards, like, you're not gonna die, Daryl. And you know, we have good times. And that mom that I was talking about, that I was really resentful towards, you know, he showed me a way on, you know, how to love her. And, you know, like not like force my way in or anything like that, but 95% of AA is showing up to your family when they need you most. And that brother that I didn't write, that I didn't see, when my dad asked me, do you want to go see Brandon? I say, absolutely. I would love to. Because this man taught me how to write a letter to my brother. They told me what to say to him, and I did it because I wanted to be free. And then he asked me to send money to him, and I did that because I wanted to be free. But then again, you know, all this stuff is about how free do you want to be. And I learned to love God in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am there for God's children. And you hear people say it all the time, they're not your children, they're God's children. You know, you have no control. And do I get resentful in AA? I do. I get resentful almost every day in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to lie about that. And when I do, I read page 552. And then I get free. And I start praying for people. I start praying for people who I thought I'd never even pray for. If anyone gets resentful, please read page 552 and do that for 2 weeks. It works. It really does. You know, because being resentful. They say that. They say that really in the book. It says a resentment is the number one killer in alcohol synonymous, and that is the truth. When I get resentful, I get resentful. You know, like, I hate everybody. I'm not going to lie. You know, I hate people in recovery houses. I hate people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, for real, I hate everybody. And then I get in people's business. I start gossiping. And if nobody gossips in AA, then I'm only joking. That's just me. You know, I start gossiping. I start getting really resentful. And they said to people, you're going to resent yourself right out of AA, and I don't want that no more. You know, because this is the best thing that ever happened to me. You people show me a God that I didn't even know existed. And I could go on and on talking about my mother. Oh my God, can I? She is like, she is my queen today, you know. And I don't have to force myself into nothing no more. I just let God, you know, like run the show with everything. God is my all. He's my all being. And when I it's pretty cool now, you know, like these cell phones are pretty awesome. I have an app where I can talk to my brother, because in prison now, upstate they have tablets now where they can send emails, and there's an app, and you know, I don't have to write a letter no more, and if I want to send money I can send it right through that app, and you know, it was pretty cool. I got a message last night at 9:30 that was unexpected, you know, and he's going up for parole in May. You know, my dad is praying, and my dad told me, he said, please pray. Say your best prayers that he gets off for parole. And I do whatever my father tells me to do. I go see my father. I love my father. I talk to him on a daily basis, and you know, sometimes that can be tough. You know, my dad is really stubborn sometimes. Or is it me? You know, because I know the kind of love that man showed me when I needed it. I really do. I know the kind of love that my family actually showed me that I wasn't deserving of. And I got all that through AA. I got all that through you people. And I had the best friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't even talk to my childhood friends really no more. You know, I don't know if they don't like me no more or what, but you know, it's just AA. You know, I work with guys in AA on my job, and you know, like we talk about things sometimes, and we get each other through the process. And you know, I have a solution today. I email them speakers. I give people speakers that I hear, you know, that come from my home group. And I was at a Super Bowl. It wasn't a party. It was just like two people there with like a lot of food that could feed like 100 people. But I'm only joking. But that's a gift. I mean, people invite you places, and you know, they eat some good food. And when Labor Day or Memorial Day comes around, I'm invited to a lot of picnics where I wasn't invited to in the past. And I owe all that to AA. And I get to sit down with other guys, and I get to be of service at my home group. And I get to greet people that I never thought I would do. And, you know, back to basics, you know, it's really easy and it's really simple. As long as you're willing to get into this, your life could be amazing, and you see the good in people. You really see the good in everybody. You see the good in people, and you see the love that people could give. And There are some people that are just way, way too positive. And that wears off on you. I'm serious. Like, you see them everywhere. You see them at the gym. And you're like, yo, Darryl, what's up? Yo, man, what's up? Why are you always so happy, man? I don't know, man. It's just me, man. And you know, that's the gift of all this right here, is to see somebody that's happy and to experience happiness yourself. And I don't know what else I can say. If anyone got anything out of it, I just ask God that one person, that this gets across to one person. And I'm not gonna lie, I was really nervous to come up here and speak. You know, I was really nervous, and you know, like, that's the fear. You know, that was me the first time chairing a meeting where I couldn't breathe, and you know, I just want to thank God. I really do. God is the center of my life. Without God, I'm not right. Seriously, I'm not of service to no one, not even myself. That's all I have.